Stand for a moment. What is that inner attentional doorway that we go through when we know we're standing, not to cook, not to brush teeth, not to wait for the bank line, but before an ATM? There's like a particular doorway in ourselves that we go to or open or whatever. And it may be simply started off by the fact that there's really nothing to do other than observe something about yourself, which may or may not be immediately interesting. Most of us walk around a bit tired. So where are you feeling tired? If you had to locate tiredness or annoyance or, you know, whatever unpleasant aspect of life or boredom or dullness, like if it has found a home someplace more particularly in a physical part of yourself, where could you locate it like that? And if I say things that are of no interest to you, just do your own thing. And I'll just be curious whether that will be affected by the ATM. So lie back. Roll your head from side to side. Let's just take a couple of simple, separate actions just to find out how separate is it? How separate is it in terms of some sense of whole that you know you have experienced previously? And the interesting thing is, of course, as it's an action of mainly to perceive something about yourself rather than to achieve something, you may notice that you fairly automatically let go something in the mouth or jaw or face, or sense your breathing in a particular way that you wouldn't if you had purpose beyond that at the moment. Okay, let that be and bend your knees, put your feet on the floor. And use a really minimal movement of one of your legs for the moment, of tilting a tiny bit inward and a tiny bit outward. Use that movement to reevaluate how much work is needed or can be eliminated, and to reevaluate where you may wish to put your foot on the floor, closer, further from your buttocks, further from the midline, closer to the midline. And you know, and that listening is immediately can be in the foot, with a level of just kind of generally or distinctly, you know, like where in the foot and ankle, toes, heel, and somewhere all around the groin. We often will say, I feel the hip joint, but actually we can put our attention where the hip joint is, but really what we sense more is the work. And therefore that's more muscular, it's more, there's more of it. Inside of the thigh, you know, in the front, kind of in where the whole groin is, where the leg is bent, behind where the contact is with what's back there, pelvis. But again, with what distinction do you listen? Back of the sitting bone, back of the sacrum, or where? And then the side, along the side from the greater trochanter, somehow a large, fairly large area. Okay, and then shift to examine all that in the other, in the other leg. But can you, when you begin to examine the other leg, can you not abandon something that you've discovered about the first leg? In other words, it's not like I've already sensed the first leg, and now I'm going to leave it. So there's a, you linger as well in around the area of the groin, around, so let's see, about the bottom of the sitting bone, and then that whole ridge of bone from there along the inside of the thigh to the pubic bone. You can always change where your feet are standing on the ground if you'd like. Not necessarily because you know where a better place would be, but you're curious simply if there could be a better place. Okay. And then let both legs be more or less non-moving, but still standing. And roll your head now side to side. Note if your listening has somehow been affected by your visits to the lower regions of yourself. I mean, before your legs were long, so that's different. Now you have to listen because they're standing. Okay. And let your head come to some stillness in an easy place. And a few times, just push upward from the feet, of course, through the pelvis to the head and pull downward. And the legs need, or you need to acquire, you need to compose, organize more work through the legs than you needed to when they were standing, but how much more? Huh? You're just rocking up and down. You're rocking up and down and you're listening too. Now your legs have to work, but more than when they were just standing, right? You had to work in your legs a little bit to keep them standing, but now they're working even more. But how much more? Right? It's going to be over push and over pull, not to use the word overkill. Okay. And can you still rock, push upward and pull downward? You can go slowly, you can go quickly, you can make it small, you can make it large. It doesn't matter as long as you observe whether you're overdoing or not. And then find out whether you can continue to push upward. That means pushing up through the spine, pulling down through the spine, and roll your head from side to side at the same time. So that your head will be pushed up and pulled down as you roll it. Yeah! Uh-huh. It's interesting how people are choosing to coordinate this. So some people are really coordinating, like, in other words, with every push the head rolls in one direction, and then with every pull it rolls down in the other direction. Or it rolls up to the middle with a push, and then gets pulled down when the chin is to the left or when the chin is to the right. So it's kind of like you're riding a slow wave. Right? Just everybody try that. So you, when you push upward, your head is really in the middle. And then when you're pulling downward, the head rolls to the left, let's say. And then you push upward and it rolls to the middle again. And then you pull downward and the head rolls to the right. Yeah, so that's one kind of coordination that I've seen. And just notice whether this requires or simply evokes tightening of the chest or of the tongue and mouth. And then there have been a few adventuresome folk who actually rolled their heads left and right independently of the push up and down. So in other words, there's been a kind of a fast up and down, almost like an oscillation, not a slow up and down, but a bleep-blop, bleep-blop, bleep-blop. And then the head just keeps rolling left and right. So there's no immediate apparent way that the thinking mind can coordinate. Therefore, I can't use words to describe it. That's it. There you go. There you go. It's just that the whole time that your head goes left and right, sometimes the chin goes away from the chest, sometimes the chin goes down to the chest. Voila. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Okay. And we'll find out if this can be improved through something else. So stretch out your legs and rest. And before we resume or continue, come up to stand to note whether any of this has affected your ease, comfort, or dizziness. Did you get dizzy? Distance? Dis-ease, yes, or dis-ease. Uh-huh. Ease or dis-ease? Which did you increase? You got both thumbs up. I just want to know.
A decrease in dis-ease.
A decrease in dis-ease. That's great. So that's a lot of... it's good. It's good to know how... What's the least intervention in a way? What's the least disturbance that can give you a good effect? It may not be true for everybody, but... Okay, lie on your back and just rest. Yeah, because sometimes a few movements will just take away your coping strategies and you realize, oh God, I'm really tired or slumpy or... Right? Bend your knees. And now the feet will just be standing. And with your right hand, reach above your head and take hold of your left side of your head, the left temple. And over the top of your head. Begin to slide your head to the right. Taking your right ear in the direction of the right shoulder and, of course, the right elbow. Kind of in an arc, right? Goes in an arc to the right and then downward. And you don't roll your head, you just really slide it. Don't go so far that you feel a strain or even a stretch on the left side. Just go to where it's really, really easy. And examine what moves in the range that is easy. I mean your head and shoulder and this, but in your trunk, you distinguish between the left and right sides of the shoulder girdle, left clavicle and its shoulder blade, the right clavicle and shoulder blade. The ribs from the armpit downward on the right, and the ribs from the armpit downward on the left. Or any sense of the, in the middle, really in the middle, in the breastbone or spine between the shoulder blades. Okay. And then just put your left hand on top of the right so that you can use both hands, one with a light push, the other with a... Now the left hand goes on the right hand. The left hand just lies on top of the right hand. So both hands are on the same side and the same part of your head. And you continue, but now... is it really the left hand that you need, or is there something about the position of the left elbow that begins to affect how you can sense or even act in the ribs on the left, in the armpit, and in the shoulder girdle on the left, and maybe even in the breastbone or spine? And how, don't make anything happen all the way in the whole spine, but listen to your whole spine. And if you listen to the whole spine down to the lower back and of course through to the sacrum, then maybe listening to the hip joints and whether you have tightened your legs or not could be helpful. And then leave it and rest. Not many of life's activities that actually require pure side bending, or as Elizabeth Berenger once said, we don't stand around side bending in life. but there's something about really examining that plane of action that's really useful because because why? Well, we can see why. But in the meanwhile, put your two feet standing and put just your left hand on the left temple where you had it momentarily and your right hand alongside your pelvis downward. And you push the head travels because the left hand pushes it, but you listen to how much the right hand does or can travel downward as your head continues to go to the right. And you might notice that if you really give attention to the sliding of that hand, and you know, explore which way do you want the palm on the floor, do you want the side of the hand on the floor, do you want the back of the hand on the floor, all of that is left up to you. But if you track the lengthening of that hand or even encourage it or imagine that it's being pulled by somebody, does that clarify or make easier, smoother the side bend, the whole folding of the ribs on the right from the armpit to the waist? Something happening between the ribs and the pelvis on the left. A sensation or at least a thought of lengthening on the left. And of course the travels of the left elbow in space may not be insignificant. So if it's possible, let that left shoulder really open so the elbow is as much to the floor as it can be. Right? Then the elbow is in the plane of your whole movement. Okay, leave it. And of course, rest again. bend your knees, put the 2 feet standing. Your left hand is up in the direction of the head, lying on the floor above you, and the right hand takes the left temple. So the left arm is long up, and the right hand takes the left temple. And continue sliding, bending to the right, keeping the nose to the ceiling. As the right ear goes to the right shoulder, which way does the left ear go? And how many attentional markers is it useful to have? And over and over, Moshe claims that the more we have, the more dimensional we become, the clearer the movement. So, what to do with the left arm? Something to do, something to notice. What if you lengthen it very slightly and at the same time slide it also in the direction that completes the image with more parts? So what would that direction be on the floor to make it clearer to the brain by taking more parts, make it clearer to the mechanical aspects of our humanness by taking more of ourselves to the right. So the whole arm, the fingers, the wrist really travels overhead to the right. So the pelvis more or less stays in the same place, but the shoulders and the left arm can travel so that it really drags, as if you're making a mat angel. And by the way, where is your left hand? He actually says temple. He doesn't say, where's your right hand? He doesn't say ear. He says temple. He says the right hand is on the temple. Does that... If you have your hand on the temple, or if you have it on the ear, do you something different in how you can use the upper cervical joints that are in the back of the throat? In other words, if you're above the ear, your ear might start ringing. Yeah, okay. Lie on your, just stretch out and rest. Bend both knees and take your left hand, put it over to the right temple. And this without power, right? Without power, with listening to the feet, to the hip joints, to the left side of your head, to the right side of your head, above the ears, to the ears. Begin to slide. And slowly, so that every time you come back to the middle, you consciously stop. You consciously stop. When your head is back in the middle, you consciously stop and just give your weight to the floor, so that the next time you begin to take your head, so the hand isn't on the forehead. If it's possible, it goes over the top of your head, so you won't see your wrist. Your wrist is like on top of your head. There you go. Yeah. That also makes it easier for the elbow to open out to the side. Yeah. And then, if your hand rests, he says temple, but maybe is it clearer if you put it really more on the, just above the ear where you already have... No, just notice whether you're already listening to what may or may not possibly happen through the center of yourself or through the right shoulder. And put your right hand to rest on the left And continue a number of times with the two hands and the two elbows. Belly, so the right hand pushes a bit, the left hand pulls, but actually the two elbows travel, and as they travel, they take the head with them. And the belly, so below the ribs, above and in front of the pelvis. But actually the weight stays equal on both sides of the pelvis, so it's not as though you turn and roll. Then keep the right hand where it is, put the left hand down alongside your trunk, and lengthen the left arm downward as you... So the left arm goes down, the right hand stays on the right side of the head, and you now use... It's like using the arms in different combinations with the head to find out which can evoke a little bit of the shortening. You more focus now on the shortening on the left side or the lengthening on the right. Kind of accordion coming together on the left, lengthening on the right. Easy belly. If you find that you can move to a certain amount and then you tighten your belly, then that's no go. Don't go that far. And then change your hands again so the left hand is on the right side of the head and the right arm stays long and rests on the floor. The right arm is a bit long up. It's long upward. The right arm is long upward. And you continue, of course, to the left. And when you take your arm, do you lengthen it a bit or do you begin to drag it over above your head to the right? How much is possible in that upper chest without pushing, right? So often, notice how your whole right side is getting long. So often that length, we work with ATMs where... Maybe the head isn't being pulled to the side, but you'd be pushing with the left foot, right, to the diagonal to the arm. So now it's a really different kind of question. It's asking how much can that right shoulder blade, right clavicle, and the whole length of the right arm, which is represented much more clearly in the image, speak to the ribs and... Which ribs does it speak to? Do you think of the chest as a whole or as ribs as more like the ones in the armpit and then the wide ones? And yeah, that's great. And is it possible to have attention on the lengthening on the right and the shortening on the left, whether in the ribs or closer to the spine? Ease through the hip joints. Good. And leave it all. Bring yourself long to the floor and rest. You could roll your head from side to side and find what that is like. A moment. And please roll to your belly. Have your forehead on the floor, so the head is not turned to the side. Your left hand is for like a push-up. And your right hand reaches over the top of your head and takes the left side of your head. So the left, the right hand's resting on the left side of your head. And you can push a bit with the left hand and without rolling to the side, slide yourself to the right. So your elbow goes in an arc, right, to the right, but really immediately in an arc, kind of downward somewhere to the what? To the feet. So the right hand is over the resting on the left side of your head, and the left hand is just, yeah, but your head is symmetrical. It's not, the nose isn't turned. So, yeah, you won't be here long, but it's, and how wide or how narrow are your legs? Do you hold in the buttocks? What's the, you know, if you were to imagine in a way that the hip joints are like the last pair of vertebral joints, meaning that the pelvis is the last big vertebra at the bottom and the head is a kind of a last big vertebra at the top. Do you listen a bit more differently? And of course with the legs long, there might be something that's a kind of inconvenient to be with your nose down, but so don't do anything exaggerated, but just a couple of moments. See, can you, what use is your left hand for you? For the left shoulder, for not pressing your nose to the ground? Can that left hand take the left shoulder and some ribs along for conveniencing the ride of the head? Can you convenience the ride of the head and the elbow to the right? Good. Okay, leave that and change to the other side. So the right hand is with the elbow in the air, the left hand takes the right side of your head. The head is not rolled, in other words, not turned left and right. And, of course, you bend to the left. And it's not just a shift to the left. It's not as if with your elbow you want to touch the edge, the left edge of your mat. It's as if you imagined that you had chalk on the tip of your elbow and you were starting to draw an arc. And if that arc were to be continued in your imagination, where would it, would you, it's a very low, it's an arc that goes close to the whole left side of yourself, if possible. And the right hand, how can it allow the right shoulder to travel in a way that lets the left shoulder go downward and the right shoulder go upward? It's kind of in a bizarre, constricted way. But if the left shoulder goes downward and the right shoulder go upward, here. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and imagine you're lying in a very narrow tube. You're doing this ATM in a very narrow pipe. So that maybe you can't expand into space, but outward space. You have to expand the possibilities of your inward. Yeah, there you go. The spine, the ribs close to the spine. Okay, and leave it. Roll to your back and rest. Roll over to one side and kneel in such a way that you are kneeling on the left knee and standing on the right foot. Put your right hand over the top to be on the left temple. And put your left hand to rest on the right hand. And begin to bend yourself to the right without falling. I think you didn't really have to add that last part, right? It's sort of this automatic thing that the brain assumes. This isn't really about falling. But it is, therefore, about finding balance. So how do you now? What's happened to the chest? Can you find the distinctions within the chest, or has this now become something less distinct in the upper parts of yourself? And then change your hands so that you're still kneeling the same way, but change your hands and find out whether that's easier. So, I mean, change your hands is on the other side of your head, yes. Yeah. Not which one is on top and which one. Yeah. So, you're now bending to the left. Bending to the left. And is that... Yes, just... I don't know who started off from where at what time in the morning to arrive here. You're taking more weight onto the left knee. Are you? What are you doing with the? What's happening at the right side of the pelvis, the right sitting bone? Is the whole right side lengthening as it would have been on the floor, or is the right sitting bone leaving? Leaving what? Not leaving. Lifting away from the floor. What if you were to still be doing this in a very narrow cylinder, except now the cylinder is put upright for your convenience for the next part of the ATM? In other words, your elbow is not going out to the outside edge of the mat. Okay. And one last thing. Can you keep the left hand where it is, put the right arm to the ceiling? So the left hand is on the right side of the temple. You put the right arm to the ceiling and bend to the left, bend to the left, bend to the left, and really consider what is what's the use of your pelvis to you there? The right side of the lower part of the pelvis, a whole sense of possibly lengthening the whole right side. Okay, leave it and rest on your back. And come to this half kneel, the same half kneel. So it's the right foot on the floor and kneeling on the left knee. And again, come to having your right hand on the left side of your head and your left hand resting on the right hand and bend to the right. And the question here is, if it has to do with balance, it's going to have to do with legs. And if it has to do with elegance, it could include the legs, which means it has to include what you do with the left knee in relation to the floor. Do you lengthen it a bit downward to the floor? Do you lift the right side of your pelvis? Does it lift by itself or does it drop? I don't know. Just those are the possibilities. So the legs are still the same. So you're kneeling on the left, and yeah, right foot. And then simply extend the left arm to the ceiling, left arm to the ceiling, and continue bending to the right. You're bending to the right. And if you are willing to take on a narrow space. And are you thinking now just of the right ear and the right side of the head going to the shoulder? Are you thinking of the lengthening? Is there a lengthening from the chin on the left side to the through the left cheek, through the left temple? Crazy kind of thing to think that your head itself can lengthen, but why not? Okay, and is there lengthening, or is balance sort of making you shorten? Or is balance making you shorten? Okay, leave it, lie on your back, and rest. That's the issue here, is that with balance, when issues of balance come up, we might kind of move and bend, but also be short at the same time. And please come to the other knee. So you're kneeling on the right knee and standing on the left foot. And you decide which way you're going to bend first. And I would suggest that you decide, so left foot and right knee. Mm-hmm. Arrange your hands, deciding whether you're going to bend to the right or to the left. And if you're not sure, then do a few movements to the right, do a few movements on the left, and direct yourself according to where you feel greatest ease. Right? Where you feel greatest ease in finding the balance. One hand is kind of pulling a bit, the other hand is pushing a bit first, and then the appropriate arm goes long to the ceiling. In another one of these half-kneeling ATMs, Moshe keeps saying, really let go in the groin between the legs, so that's where all the adductors are, that ridge of bone between pubis and sitting bone. And then the support will organize itself. Right? Most people are really busy in the foot and in the knee. But if you can get easy in the groin, and listen whether the moment you stop to breathe, really listen to your breathing, or the minute your breath becomes more constricted, or you find yourself fixing with your eyes on the floor to get yourself balanced, then don't go so far. Don't go so far. Better find less side bending, but a greater ease, right? A greater ease. And consider that you can lengthen the knee into the floor. You can lift or drop the sitting bone, the whole side of the pelvis of the foot that's on the floor, right? That can be a resource, not a demand, but a resource. And that's the big thing that we do. It's like we help people shift from things seeming to be demands as being resources. Yeah, take any rest that you'd like, and then change your arms to the other side. You can rest lying down. You can just take a yoke. Put that whole attention to the narrowness of that inner cylinder, the narrowness of the small pelvis is really helpful. The bulk is much wider, but the width of the pelvis, right, that will get balanced when the forces are organized in the inner cylinder. So it may be easier to think about that on the knee that's on the floor, but to use the bottom of the pelvis on the side where the foot is on the floor as a resource, it's really fantastic. Yeah, there you go. Great. So the arm kind of lengthens, but it also shifts over to the other side. Excellent. Okay, yep. lie on your back and rest. Unless you want to continue, that's fine with me too. Roll your head from side to side. Leave it, bend your knees. Put your right hand over the top and hold your left temple and see how it is now to just slide your, with the knees bent, to slide your head to the right. You can do whatever you'd like with the left hand. You can leave it where it is. You can put it long up. You can put it on till it rests on the right hand. It's curious too. Revisit this after having worked in standing, where whether you wanted to or not, the whole relation of the pelvis to the legs was addressed by your brain. And we try to help the brain along with these hints and clues, but so maybe you can sense some of the residue of that clarification in standing. And of course, checked in the other direction as well, to the left. And, you know, at times it becomes kind of curious. Is there more change in particular parts or more of a shift and change in the whole? And of course, usually it's some combination. And let your head find its way back to the middle. Bring both arms downward. Keep your knees bent and just rock yourself up and down and see how this spine, which has been engaged, occupied in bendings and relationship to the ribs and the weight of the head and all that, how it transmits a push up and a pull down. And whether there are parts of the region of the spine, because it's really the spine that we feel, or do we get sensation from the musculature around the spine? There are actually no sensory receptors between the vertebral body, so it's some combination of sensation and knowledge that the spine is there. And when you rock yourself up and down, could you say, wow, my God, I really feel this part of my spine or chest or inside or ribs that before was a blank or opaque. It's present, more present. And then if you wish to, launch your head into rolling left and right as you rock up and down. In whatever relationship you'd like, kind of one-to-one, where you're like on a big wave, that a push up. Oh yeah, wow. So can the spine, can the brain organize the spine to support up and pull down and at the same time roll the head without interference from mental confusion or holding in the system. Oh, great. Good. So that'll be our start to our exploration of further FI from sidelying. You can take your time, but of course the next steps will be upright and gravity.